If you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to subscribe to catch all future episodes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/switchboxtv for video versions of this show, plus loads more videos covering sport, music, and lifestyle. That's youtube.com/switchboxtv. This episode was recorded back in April 2020.
Walsh to Switchbox TV. Oh, you're knackered, are you, mate? What have you been doing?
I've just been out for a 6 mile walk and then brought some shopping back in this mental sort of world we're in at the minute. So I just haven't rested my little legs and then I'm going to jet wash the patio again for the second time.
Do you know what? I knew the great thing about talking to you, I knew there'd be somebody moaning. There would nobody moan as much as you.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm just doing stuff I didn't really want to do, but I suppose with what's happening, it's given us the reason to do it. Though I'm not that really cut out for that stuff. I'm manual labour at best.
Yeah.
I have to think about stuff. I normally make a mess of it.
Well, but you are a bit of a gym freak, aren't you? You do like to keep fit. How frustrating. I bet gym's shut and what have you, is it, down there, yeah?
But the stuff I've been doing has been really hard work. So I've been working out. And then about 18 months ago, I went to a fitness retreat. It's a bit of a boot camp in the French Alps.
Oh, nice.
And a guy introduced us into a load of resistance bands.
Yeah.
So they helped my lower back because I've got loads of little bits and pieces that don't work.
Yeah. Properly.
And so core strength and upper, so I do, all I've done is adapt it and took it into the garden. I used to take the bands to the gym with me, do a static bike, because I can't run anymore, my knees had enough. Static bike for me, heart and lungs. But even the band works quite, you're standing still with a band sometimes.
Yeah.
You're standing in a position where you're really having to work hard, but standing still.
Sure.
And your heart rate still gives it a good old pounding. And I do that most days or every other day, depending on how I've worked outside in the first place.
Yeah. So you can't run? That must be frustrating. I'm the same. My ankles, it's been driving me mad. But
I've had operations on my right knee and I had it reconstructed as well. When I was at Liverpool, I had my first op on that knee.
Yeah.
Cartilage, and then I ruptured my cruciate, and that was years later, obviously. And then I've had loads of tidy ups, and then I had growth growing out of my knee. I had to have that removed, and so every 6-9 months I have a Duraline injection into the joint just to try and calm it all down and make it feel a bit easier. And that allows me to do some things. But the one thing the surgeon said was don't look after it.
Yeah.
Now, he's got to be a bit more specific when he's talking to me, because what does that mean? Because I come out and about 4 days later, I was walking 3 miles, I was biking, and then the wound opened up and I got an infection in my knee.
So I had
antibiotics. Yeah. And he said, and I went, yeah, but I used to be a really good rehabber. And he went, yeah, Paul, that was 30 years ago. I went, oh yeah. Or 20 years ago, you know, because my mentality is the same.
Yeah, I know.
But my body's not.
What didn't you? You fell off your bike as well, didn't you? That was a while back. Oh, look at that. Yeah, what was that? Go on, what were you just not looking and crashed into the back of the car or something?
I played football on a Sunday, and I left my bag in the back of someone's van. Anyway, so he dropped it to the Marriott down in Portsmouth, which is about 15 miles from here.
Yeah.
So there was a bike sitting outside. I thought, you know what? I'll get on that and have a ride down there. As a workout, a bit of a change. So I got on my bike, off I went, got down there. Anyway, so I suppose out of 30-mile round trip, I've done 27 of it, and I'm hurtling down this hill with a lady driver. Not anything against women drivers, but...
Yeah, be careful. Got to be careful.
I know. Was coming up the hill, and just didn't see me. Started turning right, and as I'm hurtling towards... It's a perfect storm is where it's coming like that, you know. I just made a decision to throw the bike away. So as I threw the bike away, I turned sideways and I hit between the doors about 30 mile an hour and just the arm come up like that, you know. So it was a bit, I was lucky, if I'm honest, because if I hadn't have hit between the doors, I could have hit the glass and my, who knows what would have happened.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
You're like the bionic man.
Well, no, but it's it was one of those injuries I weren't expecting, put it that way.
Listen, let me quickly talk about Raddy Antich, who passed away this week. You knew him well. You played with him.
Yeah. Just a really good guy, you know. But and a real technical footballer as well. But I spoke to David Pleat yesterday, and on the day before, I can't remember. And he was not well himself, by the way.
Really?
And so he's having a tough time, David, at the minute. So. I hope he recovers.
Absolutely.
But he's he never used to play Raddy. Raddy was a, put it this way, I think Raddy was a victim of the team shape that every English team played, 4-4-2. So when he didn't have the ball in the middle of the park in a two, Raddy was a liability because he didn't run around, didn't smash into people, was a technical footballer, could hit a 40-yard pass with the outside of his foot. Both feet, could nutmeg people, you know, technical, very smart footballer. You know, but typical continental player playing a little bit before his time in England.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward, if you now put him in, say, a five in the midfield and had other people doing all the...
Yeah, brilliant,
And tackling them and got Raddy on the ball, he would have been top draw.
Yeah.
That's why I believe, and I think Pleaty would admit this, that he didn't play as much as he should have done. He still played 100 times. But and not only that, I was 19 and he was 33, so Raddy was a really nice guy. Obviously, didn't mix in my circle that much because I was like young and mad and running around doing what 19-year-olds do. But many years later, I was down in Porto Banus in Marbella, with my wife and my two kids. My kids were young and we was pushing the prams through. Actually, I don't know if we had prams then or whether they were just walking, but... And who sat... Do you know Sinatra's bar?
Yeah, I do, actually, yeah.
There was a little bar next to it, and Raddy was sat there reading the paper. Raddy, what are you doing? It's great. It's just great. Chance meeting, bump into him.
Brilliant.
And, you know, great. Oh, what was he? You know, his English was like that. And, yes, you have to come to our house. Yeah, great, love to. So me and my family went all... He had his... Unbelievable. I think he told me a bit of a story about Jesus Gill every time he signed for Atletico. I think it was Atletico.
It was.
Gave him another apartment. And so he had these two apartments on the top floor of this building, mashed them all into one, and it was fantastic. So we went over with his, Vera's wife, bless her. And, we had a nice day there, really nice day. And he looked after us great, Raddy.
Brilliant.
I sort of reconnected with him a little bit. And over the years, I've always been, it's always been great to see him, but just don't see each other because he lives in Madrid or he lives back in Serbia.
Yeah.
And luckily, 18 months ago, we had a reunion at Luton and Raddy came across and, I posted a picture on Twitter and Instagram of me and Raddy at that event. Well, we had breakfast the next morning. Not only did we do the event, me, David Moss, Brian Halton, Wayne Turner... We all went over and met Raddy for breakfast and had breakfast with Raddy and Vera. And that was the last time I saw him. And I was totally shocked when I got the... I was just flicking through Twitter and I saw it on there. Luton had posted it. I was, and apparently he's had a long illness, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know any of the details,
No. Listen...
I was spewing a little bit, if I'm honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, can I just ask you, I've got to remember, John Richardson's writing a book on Gaza. He's done everybody. He's interviewed Harry, Wadler, da-da-da. I was chatting to him yesterday and I said, oh, Paul Walsh, brother. And he said, oh, can I get hold of Walsh? He said, remind me at the end. He wants to get hold of you. Is that okay?
I'll think about it. I'm jet washing the drive. Tell him.
Well, I've got to ask. Have you got any Gaza? I mean, you played with Raddy Antich. You played with Gaza as well, didn't you?
Listen, I got. There's loads of bits and pieces. I mean, I suppose they were funny, the time. But I look back on it and I look at him now.
Yes.
And I look at even me now, and
me.
Well. you know, looking at you is hard work, even with these glasses on.
It's only a mother could love, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I look back at his life and how ridiculously stupid he was. But so were we. But he was brilliant, a brilliant footballer. A totally strange mix of childish, stupid, mad, mental, brilliant, all rolled into one. And sometimes even I even found him irritating when I was at Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know, because it was literally the Gazza show. But you had to admire his great ability. You could not. And he was funny most 90% of the time. So sometimes, because I was a bit older than him, I found him stupid and irritating. Yeah. But he did mad things. I mean, I remember we'd been to visit some disabled kids over in Jersey, and we were coming back from the airport, and we were both feeling a bit hungry. And I don't know if you know, do you know Southgate? Because England used to sort of train not far and stay in a hotel. Anyway, it's a roundabout, and on the roundabout, there's a big Wimpy. It's been there for donkey's years. I think it's gone now, but it was there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I was like, should we go in there and get something to eat? Yeah, and it all had glass windows all the way around it. So we go in, you know, a bit different the diet back in then, double cheeseburger and chips. Anyway, and there's, because he was like superstar. So anyway, a load of kids are looking through the window at him, and he's got the burger in his mouth, and he's got it all, he's eating it, and it's all coming out of his mouth, and he's just being stupid, Gazza, and they're all going, oh, Gazza, you know. Anyway, so it's time to leave. I said, right, I'm up paying for the bill. And I said, anything else you want? He went, I'll have a 99. Right? So because it's him, the geezer's whipped him up the biggest 99 chocolate flake on top. Anyway, and I had to say, did I have the same? I can't remember what I had. And I was driving, so... Anyway, by the time I've got my money back and look round, the flake's gone and he's got half of it round his face, you know, where he's trying to tidy it all up. When we get in the car, I think he used to do it, just let it all drip down his face just for effect. Then we got in the car and we're driving up the road, and there's this guy on a bike, proper racing bike, you know, backpack, helmet. Did he have a helmet? Anyway, he had the full it on, backpack, all in one, you know, proper racing bike. And as we indicate to overtake, I just, the window just went down to my left-hand side. And as we're just going past him, Gazza went like that with his ice cream, and he timed it unbelievable. And it sort of went past the guy and then blew straight and hit him straight in the right eye socket. And as I've gone past him, I've looked in the mirror and there's this bloke with just a great big blob of ice cream shoveling down his face.
We should be laughing, but brilliant, yeah.
We was crying like a cat. We were like a load of school kids anyway, if I'm honest. It was like, that's part of the ridiculousness of being anywhere near him. And I was crying. I said, oh, that was funny. That was unbelievable. I said, what makes you do things like that? I'll never know. But that was hilarious. And then we stop at a set of traffic lights about six back, just gone red. Oh, I went, oh, Gaz, I tell you what, the fella's got his head down, he's pedaling like crazy, and he ain't, don't look at me, mate, don't look at me. Anyway, the fella's getting closer and closer, the lights ain't changed. And the fella's near enough on top of us, and now Gaz has pooked himself, put the button down on the door, because he pooked it put it himself, and the fella's got off, and he's, just the lights had changed, but we hadn't moved, and he's come over, and he's banged on the window, well, he's punching the window. He's actually punching. And there's two stories here, because when I used to do my after dinner, I used to say, the fella banged on the window and Gazza reluctantly lowered it down. And out of the backpack, the fella pulled out a pen and a piece of paper and said, Gazza, could you please sign that for us? Because it had a better ending to the story. That was nonsense, didn't really happen. The bloke tried to punch the window, booted the door. And as we slowly pulled away, Gazza turned over his shoulder and started sticking two fingers up at him as we drove away. Anyway, but that was just another episode in the day in the life of. You know, I lived with him for 3 months in a hotel, and it was bedlam. I couldn't wait to get away from him, you know, because him full on every day. Listen, just too much.
We were just chatting before. You said what you're doing. You're volunteering at a rehab centre. What's that all about?
I had some of my own issues a little bit, and needed to stop drinking myself.
Yeah.
And so I got some help with that. And then part of what I was doing was once I changed a bit myself in the way I was approaching stuff, I then had to look at, because I think football really makes you selfish and self-obsessed.
But you have to be, you have to be that way in a way, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, you do, and that's
not
that's,
a bad way, but it's all self-preservation.
No, football, you have you strive hard.
Single-minded, haven't you?
Well, people forget for 10 years leading up to your 16th birthday. Although it's different with me, but now kids are in an academy from as early as that, pretty much. But you're playing football, you're striving and you're loving it. And then my goal was always to be a footballer. Yeah. Everyone kept telling me I wouldn't be because I was too small. And right up until 14, I was getting rejection. And it was just my self-will, desire, drive, you know, because my technical ability, because I was a bit of a star school football, star in the Sunday football, star in the district football. When I got to county football, it was slightly better kids and it was land of the giants. And I was a skinny 9-year-old, sort of 9 stone, like skinny kid. And the manager just never thought he could win a game with me and his team. Even though on the ball, I was better than all of them.
Yeah.
Right? So, but between 14 and 15... So I had to sit there and watch all these kids play at Wembley in England schoolboys. I went to England schoolboy trials, 1977. I'll never forget it because Elvis Presley died while I was there. Loughborough University, August 77. And so anyway, at the end of the week, we got dished up into A team, B team, C, D, E and F. I'm in the E team. Nowhere to be seen.
What age is this?
15. I've never felt so resentful in my life.
Yeah.
Right. And angry. Right. Ah, I want to be where they are. And I weren't. I hated watching it on telly. I was, you know, just hated it. Because that game was on telly then at Wembley.
Yeah, I remember. Scotland. Yeah. Paul Rideout and all that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But yeah, this, yeah, he's younger than me. But, that was a big year between 15 and 16, which was, you know, in school. I wasn't good at school, badly behaved, only wanted to play football, didn't want to be there. And to be fair, I'd been badly behaved most of my life, if I'm honest.
But, yeah, no.
but it's like, in the gym at lunchtimes, I was smashing weights, trying to just get a bit more physical strength. I knew if I could get a bit stronger, I'd be all right. Then it didn't become an issue with Charlton signing me on. And then, you know, without boring you to death, I became the second youngest player to ever play for Charlton.
Yeah.
You know, at 16.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly my
That's a crucial age, though, isn't it, for growing?
Yeah.
You know,
I stopped growing at about, I don't know, 14, I think. But no, seriously, in terms of height. But, so then it was about what can I make my man strength into?
Yeah,
and I did enough, and because I developed a great ability to bounce off people, ride challenges, and I had great agility because of the way I played. You know, I now could handle myself. And the other great thing about it was that back then we played reserve football.
Yeah.
So I'm playing against men at 15.
Yeah.
Right. And this really frustrates me about current football because my son was at Bournemouth for a couple of years and they're 18 and they go, oh, go out on loan at wherever it is and man up.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was manning up at 15 playing against experienced men.
Yeah, yeah.
So that manned me up because I was getting, you know, disgruntled first team players that ain't in the team.
Yeah, smashing you.
Got some like 15-year-old whippersnapper running around like a blue arse fly, you know, trying to have a good game and show the manager who's watching and understand how good I am. And he didn't want me mugging him off. So he was trying to scythe me down, elbow me, punch me, headbutt me, you know, and you know, that's how you learn. That's how you learn to cope with it.
No, absolutely.
So I was aware of all them things. I knew, you know, when someone had given me a bad ball, I had to try and receive it. But I knew he played it to me too late. Just that 1 second too late. I knew I was getting smashed.
Yeah.
Got light on my feet. So if I did get smashed, just cleared my legs out.
Yeah. Right. You know, roll with the blow kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So technique. You know, anyway. So technique. Survival techniques.
Yeah. Which brings us back to why you're doing. You're volunteering at rehab. Go on.
All right. No. I was talking about badly behaved. I was self-obsession and I think football, you become self-obsessed. I think it is an obsession. I was obsessed with my training, obsessed with getting to be a footballer. And that's, they're the types that do make it. But they're also, they're also a lot of the types that have problems later on. And I'm no different. You know, I come out of football and I felt lost.
Yeah.
You know, on the surface, everyone thought my life was great because,
yeah. You
know, I was working at Sky, you was there. I'd managed to carve a niche out. Now, I was okay at all that, but I wasn't nothing better than okay, and I made a living out of it.
Yeah.
But even that, I was irritated with it. I thought, why is he doing this? I should be doing that. And I was irritable. Yeah. And I did business investments, lost money, made money. I was a builder. I didn't want to be a builder. Why do I want to be a builder? I've been a footballer. I don't want to be a builder.
Yeah.
And I was having to do stuff I didn't want to do. I was irritable. And a lot of the time when I messed it up, I was angry. A lot of the time, you know, and I used to drink on all, of those feelings. Don't get me wrong. I never had a great capacity to drink.
We know that, yeah.
But I could drink. And that was dangerous in it. But in a way, it was a blessing because it meant I never had a great ability to drink. But in other ways, it was also a nightmare because I got drunk before everybody else.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, I'm a nuisance. And not only that, anything could happen.
Yeah.
When I'm in that state.
Yeah.
And so anyway, the consequences eventually caught up with me. And, I had to do something different. And I'd had a mate who you know, but I won't mention him.
Yeah.
Who helped me and to do things differently. And so I went into Alcoholics Anonymous and I've been in 4 years. You know, from the Dubai trip to come out, I've not been drinking.
So
that's a hard trip to go on if you're not drinking. Yeah. But I'm okay with that. And I did. Yeah. I went out to Dubai this year and I did two AA meetings while I was there.
Right.
You know, in Dubai. But the spin-off is to try and take yourself out of yourself. Stop thinking about you and start helping other people.
But you need help. It's sometimes hard to do yourself, isn't it? It's almost like the first step is to ask for help kind of thing.
Yeah, but you have to be shown a different way. And all I'm saying to you is that when you've been in a self-obsessed world, which is all about you, me, then you can, you know, although I feel like I've provided well for my family and stuff, my life still always revolved predominantly around me, football, since football. Yeah. But I had to go out and earn that money a different way, and I struggled with that.
Yeah.
I hated my life. And sometimes I hated me. And it was like, cut a long story short, part of the process is to try and find trading anger, resentment, aggression, abuse at times, arrogance, ego, trade all them things in for humility.
Mm-hmm.
But what I notice is if I don't do what I need to do on a daily basis, my old head comes back very quickly.
Yeah.
So, so I have to speak to one of my own kind, or I have to go and, you know, I have a kid who's 26 who I'm helping a little bit.
Yeah. Does that help you? Does that help you helping people?
Helping him helps me.
Yeah.
Because when I'm thinking of someone else, I'm not thinking about me. Because I'm always thinking about me. No, because my life's always been about thinking about me and where I'm going, thinking about me and what I'm doing.
Don't you think though that, and I think of it, even though, you know, when I was working and okay, it's slightly different, but TV and sport are different. When I stopped working and people don't want you and you're too old and you're this, that, it's very difficult to adjust. And I think for a lot of footballers, when they've had that obsessive life, because it has to be an obsessive life, it doesn't go gradually, it goes like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a massive adjustment. It's like, what do I do with the rest of my life?
I truly believe the PFA get a little bit of stick in this country because they don't do enough for players. I'm going to slightly disagree with that, right? I think that especially the top end players have a problem with deflating their ego enough to go and retrain and do a normal job. I come out of football, football agent, TV, fluffy, lovely. I want all the fluffy lovelies, you know, jobs. I don't want to go, I really, looking back on it, what I would have loved to have done is gone back to school in psychology and addiction.
Yeah.
And worked in football somewhere with
that. Is it too late to do that?
Yeah. No, do you know what? So I've looked at it like this. I think it is too late. No, actually, it's never too late. But I don't want to have to commit to trying to get a degree in the next 2 or 3 years and all what it would take to get it. And also, once I've got a degree, there's an amount of ego attached. No, that's assuming I got a degree. There's a lot of ego attached from me becoming qualified versus being a volunteer. When I'm being a volunteer, I'm Mr. No One who's just helping. Once I become whatever,
I understand.
I'm now, it's a money earning situation. It's non-voluntary, although I would like to help. And you know, so I'm just going to do what I do. So one day a week, I volunteer, not at the moment, but this is how I'm on Zoom because we do our. So yesterday we spend all day.
Right. Yeah.
So the 28 day inmates who are there for lots of successful people. This is a high end rehab. I didn't go there because it was high end. It was just I knew where it was and I knocked on the door one day and said, "Can I be a volunteer?"
Brilliant.
That was 2.5 years ago. So they, I've gone in there and now I've become part of their setup. So when 28 dayers go in there, which could be a doctor, there was even a therapist in there, you know, who was an addiction therapist who just you know, he lost her way. You know, there's all sorts of people in there for different walks of life. So I sit in with two therapists, and I'm called a peer supporter, where you go through your short life history. Then you start on what's called step work, which is looking at the past and your own behaviours and your own stuff. And you know, a lot of people struggle with it. They struggle with thinking they was coming just for a rest at some holiday camp and just get detoxed and then move on. There's a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of lectures, a lot of writing, a lot of self-assessment, a lot of self-awareness stuff to try and find out what makes their head go like it does. And then when they come out of the clinic, the aftercare that we was doing yesterday, they all come back to the clinic on a Wednesday and everybody shares their reintegration back into life with their problems. They might have wives that they've separated from. They might have kids that they don't see. They might have all sorts of issues. You can imagine it, can't you? The fallout.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the session's about trying to help people readjust into that. And everybody shares their stuff.
Are you getting better with experience at helping?
But you've got to be doing it right yourself, you know. And then there's with NA, AA, GA, there is a spiritual part of it. Now this is where people start getting frightened because they think you're talking about God.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with any of that stuff because this is part of a contradiction of all my growing up, though. My dad was nearly a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
Obviously he wasn't, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Know? So he insisted on me going to Catholic school, going to church and all that. I was an altar boy.
Yeah. Right?
But on a Sunday, I'd be handing over the host and the wine in church. On a Monday, I'd be thieving out of a shop.
Yeah.
You know, because I made my own rules up. I was rag-ass Rovers from Southeast London.
Yeah.
And when I didn't have what I wanted, I went and got it, whatever way I wanted to. So yeah. I made my own rules up. Well, when you make your own rules up all your life, you know, to suit you.
Yeah.
you know, ultimately, somewhere along the line, it's going to come back and bite you on the arse.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's looking at all that behaviour stuff. But many people have dysfunctional growing ups, dysfunctional situations, lots of stuff. You know, but when I bump into you and I'm playing for Liverpool and we first meet, who's bothered about any of that? You know, I think about my best moment of my life, scoring in 14 seconds at Anfield against West Ham. You know, on my home debut, my old man, a West Ham fan up in the stands. Best moment of my life.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about when I did this and when I did that, when I was on what happened to me here and what happened to me there. Yeah. You just don't ever go there. You sweep all that stuff away and ignore it. And later you have to look at all that. And that's how I've looked at it.
Can you look and assess how you are now to say how you were 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. Less explosive, less angry. Still irritable at times because I thought I was getting into a good place with my life and everything was going, and then this has happened. But this is the problem, see. It's like this is only happening to me. Coronavirus is only happening to me. Well, of course it's not, is it? It's happening to everyone. But on a bad day, I can get bogged down in my own shit, my own self-pity and all of that nonsense and start feeling sorry for myself because it just ain't going how I want it.
But then at the same time, can you, because of what you've been through or what's been happening in the last couple of years, can you deal with that situation better?
Yeah, I do. I you know, there's a great prayer in AA. It's called the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's a brilliant prayer. It's so simple and it's so true. You know, I can't influence anything that's happening now. I just can't. You know, I can only do my bit in terms of what we're supposed to be doing. And sooner or later, the thing sorts itself out, and then the world will be where the world is.
Yeah.
And then I'll be where I am. But me accepting that is part of the problem. It's always like, why did this have to happen now? Why, you know, why didn't I get all my money out of my pension before it all went south? You know, like it's only happening to me.
Yeah. No, mate, in that score, it's happening to me as well. It's happening to loads of
people. No, it's happening to everyone. Yeah. So anyway, so finding gratitude has been a problem because I live in a great house. It's a bit tired because 17 years old, I built it, but it's a bit tired. It needs stuff doing to it. But it's a great house. I've got a nice garden. I've got a nice patio to jet wash. And I'm moaning about jet washing it, but I've got a nice patio. So many people haven't got half of what I've had. They haven't lived my life. But sometimes I have to say it out loud to realise how lucky I've been. Yeah. It's not, you know, his little work from South East London.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I've gone on and done amazing things with this little body of mine. You know.
And by the way, it is little.
Yeah, I know it is. You know, so, I mean, it's like, it's amazing how I achieve all that with this. You know.
Mate, listen.
That was my biggest asset and my biggest downfall all rolled into one.
Listen, I must admit, I didn't expect us to drift off to all this kind of stuff. But absolutely, absolutely brilliant, by the way.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Well, you asked me a question. I'm not going to lie to you. You said,
it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's inspirational, my friend. It really is. It really is. And you should be, you know, instead of, it's almost taken a compliment that way. I don't mean it any glib kind of way, but, you know, I'm my hat's off, and I think when people see this, if it's okay, people see this, I think they'll be absolutely inspired too, because a lot of it is, it's only happening to me, but it's not. It's happening to to millions and millions. Not just the virus. I mean, those feelings, the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, people don't like talking about their feelings.
No, they
don't. And when I went into the rehab center, on occasions when I was struggling, it was really good for me because I only had two emotions that I could feel at that time was anger and resentment. Mm-hmm. Resentment for why ain't I doing that? Why is this happening to me? Why? Mm-hmm. Right? And then angry when it, because of all of those things.
Yeah.
And so when they actually had to give me, it's called a feelings wheel, which had all emotions around the center and then it fanned out into different emotions. And I had to try and identify how I actually felt about stuff. Who likes talking about feelings? No one wants to talk about their feeling. How are you feeling today? Yeah, everyone goes, yeah, I'm all right. Because I spent years just putting a mask on. Yeah. And however I'm feeling
I also think that's a particularly sportsman stroke footballer kind of feeling when you're in a dressing room and everybody's giving it you don't want to sort of say, well, actually, I'm feeling a bit fed up today or I'm feeling I am worried or whatever.
Well, I've been in a dressing room where I've been giving it to other players. I've been in a dressing room where other players have been giving it to me. It's all part of the territory of being in top-level sport in a team. You know, and the higher you go, and I was at the ultimate when I was at Liverpool, there was no place for passengers anywhere in that team. And, you know, stuff happens, you know, and sometimes life is unfair. I used to look at that and resented some of my managers, right?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I have to accept, after Hazel tragedy, for instance, I had a resentment towards Kenny Dalglish for years. After Hazel, right, the manager changed. So the manager that bought me wasn't anymore, right? And over time, he played me, and then I got a bad injury. So I was angry, resentful about my injury. I missed the FA Cup final. It was my best season, the double winning season, 1986. I missed it. I was devastated, drank myself senseless, right? Because I couldn't cope with not playing in the Cup final. Couldn't cope with not playing in those last 9 games. So all the fluffy bits where you lift the cup at the end, you lift the cup at Wembley, which I'd grown up because the FA Cup then was massive.
Mm.
Right? All my life I'd grown up wanting to play an FA Cup final. Wasn't going to be playing it. Poor me. Right? Like it's never happened to anybody else. Right? And it's only through this program I've realised that, you know, maybe Kenny didn't rate me like, maybe he bought Peter Beardsley. So he obviously bought Peter Beardsley was a better player than me. I couldn't accept that.
Mm.
Maybe I just got to accept he did what he wanted to do. To, you know, he went on and won several trophies. I went to Tottenham as a bit of a drunk, right? Living in a hotel, single lad, 25. In that last year at Liverpool, I turned into a drunk. Because I had no games, nothing to aim for, not playing, just consoled myself with drink and girls, right? And then went to London, consoled myself, kept consoling myself with drink. And Terry Venables gave me a great opportunity. Mm. And in the end, Terry Venables never used to play me. And he used to play Paul Stewart in front of me. And I'm like, oh, how's this happening? How can he be playing if he's not as good as me? And I didn't think he was, right? But I'd burnt all my own bridges.
Mm.
And if I was to see Terry Venables now, I'd apologise to him.
And Kenny Dalglish.
And so, the same with Kenny. Well, not so much the same with Kenny. The only reason being is I was very unlucky in that period. But maybe my aggressive attitude towards him, because we had stand up toe to toes,
yeah,
in each other's face.
Mm.
I didn't care, and so I was uncontrollable in those moments. And I would have I would have rolled around with him in his office if he wanted to.
Yeah. Right?
That's how it was. Because I had to have this mentality that I don't live in fear of no one.
Mm.
Because the minute I'm intimidated by you because you're or someone who's bigger than me, then I'm done.
Yeah.
Because my whole life was about never being intimidated because I'm only small.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, so, but there again, you breed a load of thinking. If I see Kenny, and I do see him most years down in La Manga, I would say sorry to him, for my reactions towards him at different times. I would apologize for him. And I definitely to Terry Venables, because I couldn't stand, I blamed Terry for me not being in the team. I scored a hat trick one week and got dropped the next week, and I found that incredible. Because the reason being is that Paul Stewart was doing a lot of the same sorts of things that I was doing.
Yeah,
he paid $2 million for Paul Stewart and $500,000 for me. And so he was always going to make. It's just the way it is. He's always going to try and make Paul Stewart work.
Yeah,
that's the way it is. But I couldn't accept it. Couldn't accept it, and I couldn't accept a lot of stuff. So,
but are you better now? Are you feeling you're better now?
Because you know what? Once you let all that resentment go.
Yeah,
fuck, carrying a rucksack of on your back everywhere.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You know, so that goes.
I'm going to stop you there because I'm literally running out of tape. But, Walshy, thanks.